Welcome, everybody. My name is Alexander Micklethwaite, music director of the Oklahoma City Philharmonic, and you are listening to my first podcast. This season, the 2021 season, is, as you all know, a little different because of the COVID pandemic. We are going to have programs. We are going to have a concert for each one of our classics and pops. They are different in the sense that they will be socially distanced on the stage. I reprogrammed the season a couple of times and settled with an orchestra that is roughly 40 to 45 players large, strong, and where every player can sit socially distanced 6 feet apart from each other. The idea came from Europe. The idea actually was started with the Berlin Philharmonic beginning of May already. You might have heard about that, that they started a concert with playing a chamber version of Mahler's Fourth Symphony. It was, I think, 14 players on the stage. So we all thought, gosh, there's a way to perform, and we are trying to do that. Now, in a nutshell, the upcoming season will feature 8 different programs. One is an all Beethoven program, as a happy birthday to Ludwig van Beethoven, who is going to be 250 years old in December. Then we're going to have an all Tchaikovsky program, simply because I love Tchaikovsky. Then we have Schumann Symphony No. 3, Sibelius Symphony No. 7, Copland Appalachian Spring, Richard Strauss. We are going to feature musicians and soloists from the Philharmonic. And I thought this would be really fun and interesting to highlight our talent here in Oklahoma City. And we are going to open and close our season with 2 very talented younger composers of African-American descent. And I'm thrilled to present them to you all. And we'll talk more about them in a second. Well, so I hope you can lean back, relax, and come with me on this little journey through our first classics, our first masterworks of the season, where we're going to perform music from Carlos Simon, Astor Piazzolla, Osvaldo Golijov, and we're finishing off with Erich Korngold. Let's start with our first composer of the night, Carlos Simon. Well, Carlos is from African-American descent, and I thought I would give a little bit an introduction about the history of composers of African-American descent. And, well, several come to mind, of course. There is Scott Joplin, Duke Ellington, George Walker, Florence Price. Yet the one that I would like to start with is Joseph Bologne Chevalier de Saint-Georges, who lived from 1745 to 1799. I picked him to start out this podcast because Chevalier de Saint-Georges was remembered as the first classical composer of African origins. He was born in the French colony of Guadeloupe and was the son of Georges Bologne de Saint-Georges, a wealthy married planter, and his wife's African slave. His father took him to France when he was a young boy, and he was educated in Paris and actually became a champion fencer. But not only that, he was also educated in music, and he learned the violin. And in his time, the late 18th century, not only played, but composed string quartets, symphonies, and concertos. And he led one of the best orchestras in Europe, Les Concerts des Amateurs. And actually, former US President John Adams judged him the most accomplished man in Europe. Let's listen a little bit, and let's listen to the second violin concerto, the first movement by Joseph Bologne. It's going to be performed by Qian Zhu and the Toronto Camerata under the direction of Kevin Mellon. Thank you. Yes, this was Joseph Bologna. Sounded like Mozart, right? Now, this entire introduction of Joseph Bologna was really to give some historical context regarding composers of African American descent. Our first composer of tonight, of our podcast, is Carlos Simon. Carlos is composer of symphonic music, jazz, gospel. He is the 2018 Sundance Composition Fellow. He has performed at the Kennedy Center, studied actually at the University of Michigan under Michael Dougherty, and was the recipient of the 2016 Marvin Hamlisch Film Scoring Award. I picked Carlos Simon's work, This Land, because, well, of his background, the sense of identity that it at least gives me. It's very inspired, and it is based on the famous poem by Emma Lazarus, the American author of Jewish descent, The New Colossus, which is of course engraved at the bottom of the Statue of Liberty. The poem makes reference to the Colossus of Rhodes, which is one of the seven wonders of the ancient world and stood at the harbor of the island of Rhodes. Hear the poem. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land, here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. And here now excerpts of my interview with Carlos Simon. And we started with the question of identity of a classical composer of African-American descent.
Well, it's always been, for me, as a Black man in America, it's interconnected with to me as a composer. You know, most of my music is about my experience as a Black man. The term African-American is an identifier, you know, and it's, of course, it's loaded with many different things, you know. Most of my pieces are influenced by Black culture in this country.
Do you consider, do you even have that label still, a classical composer? Because I think you do jazz, gospel, a whole range, right?
I prefer composer, just because it covers a lot of ground. First of all, the term composer, it's sort of loaded because that can mean different things. You know, do you consider a person who creates beats on the computer a composer? You know, does it mean that they write, you know, singing into voice memos on their phone, and it's an idea? Is that composing? You know, and so for me, it's anything that if you're creating, I consider it, you're considered as a composer to me, no matter the genre. Genre is another thing for me that's sort of loaded with expectations. You know, if I say I'm a jazz composer, you are, as a listener, are expecting to hear certain things, certain harmonies, certain rhythms and sounds, if you will. And the same thing if I'm saying a classical composer, well, does that mean that I'm writing in the style of a classical composer like Mozart or Haydn? So what does it actually mean, you know, that maybe contemporary classical composer, you know, that gives it a little more definition, but that still didn't give me an idea as to what sounds I should be expecting. So, you know, I prefer a composer because it gives me a like blank slate to work with. My father's a preacher, a pastor in Atlanta. I started playing piano in this church. It was a brand new church. And so I was enlisted, sort of, if you will, at a very early age to play piano, and I learned by ear. I didn't start reading music until later in my life. But the music that I heard and was playing was gospel music, which, you know, is a hotbed for, you know, the great artists like Aretha Franklin and Pharrell Williams. They grew up playing and listening to gospel music. And so for me, that's where it begins. And that's where, honestly, I always go to whenever I start writing a piece. And gospel music is such a rich wellspring for me to draw upon. And that's not to say that my music always has gospel influences. It definitely creeps in subconsciously, but the intent of gospel music, whereas like the soulful expression, where you're just reaching to the innermost recesses of pain and anguish and frustration and reaching to get that and bring it to the fore, you know, and that's where I go, you know, for my music. Music for me is, I hate to use this cliche thing, it's universal. One of the first classical pieces that I heard was Beethoven's second movement of Beethoven's 7. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those warm, gooey chords at the very beginning that Beethoven used, that really like struck me. It's like, what is this? And it was very similar to like what I was feeling in gospel music. And that sort of drew me into this world of concert music, you know, the symphony orchestra. This Land, right, is the piece you programmed. You know, the idea of the piece is to I guess, remind Americans of its ideals. You know, it's inspired by the quote by Emma Lazarus called New Colossus. And one of the lines in the poem, it says, bring me your tired, bring me your poor. It's listed on the steps of the Statue of Liberty and written in a time where people from Europe were coming, and really all over the world, were coming to the new world, this new place for prosperity. And America was welcoming with open arms. And now we're seeing sort of the same thing, but in a different context. And so the piece is really sort of meant to draw from the inspiration in which the poem by Emma Lazarus and the intent. We're all a part of this melting pot, you know? And so I've sort of infused different anthems from different countries into the work, and to represent the welcoming nature of Statue of Liberty. You know, what those immigrants would have felt coming into Ellis Island at the beginning of the century. Thank you so much for programming the piece.
Let's listen. Hear the middle section of Carlos Simon's This Land. Well, any familiar tunes? Yes, you heard probably the French Marseillaise, you heard the national anthems of Russia, of Mexico, and of course, of America. So the whole idea is identity to give a kaleidoscope of the American melting pot. Hear one more time this little stretch and see if you can pinpoint the different instruments, the different colors, and their anthems. Thank you. The beautiful thing about the 20th century is that more and more composers developed in different countries. It was not only Germany or England or France. No, the entire world seemed suddenly to be open for composers who composed for classical orchestra. Before we delve now into our next composer, into our second composer, Astor Piazzolla, I want to throw out some countries and let's see if you come up with the, well, with the right composers that lived there in the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century. Finland. Who is from Finland? Sibelius, right. France. Well, that's an easy one. France, of course, we have Debussy, Ravel. Now, how about Hungary? Hungary, Bartok, Liszt, Kodály. Actually, the film composer Miklós Rózsa is from Hungary. All right, how about Italian? I mean, those are all the easy ones. Italian, of course, Verdi, Puccini. Norway, Greek. So the point is, again, end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, musicians were able to study in more countries around the planet and around the world and created a very beautiful, localized style of composition. But this extended now. It extended into South America, Middle America. So Mexico. Who is from Mexico? Carlos Chavez, Moncayo, Revueltas. Well, how about Brazil? Brazil, Villa-Lobos. Then we have Argentina. Argentina has actually a couple. There's Casella, Piazzolla, and Golioff. And those two we are performing at our concert tonight. Piazzolla and Golioff. All right, I guess you get my point. The expansion of composition talent around the globe in the 20th century. And one of my goals, my vision is to highlight those and to expand and to show creativity in all those different countries. All right, Astor Piazzolla. Astor Piazzolla was born in 1921 and lived till 1992, so in the entire 20th century. He was a bandoneon player and tango composer. He performed with his own orchestra, with his own band, all over the world, and became quite famous as a performer and a composer. Now, the story behind his development, his studies, is that he actually tried to become a 20th century classical contemporary composer. He not only studied in Argentina, he studied with Carlos Gardel. He went to Paris and studied in Paris with the most famous composition teacher of the 20th century, Nadia Boulanger. And here he was encouraged to not compose in the traditional contemporary way of Vienna, of Europe. No, Nadia Boulanger encouraged him to go back to his roots and to use the tango and the music of Argentina to compose, compose new works. The work that we're going to perform is called The Four Seasons, Las Cuatro Estaciones. And it is mirrored after, of course, The Four Seasons by Vivaldi, by the Italian composer Vivaldi. Piazzolla was highly influenced not only by Nadia Boulanger, also by Johann Sebastian Bach, whom he studied when he was a teenager. And as you will see, I will show you in a second, the Four Seasons go back to the Baroque time, go back to that time, and in this case now Vivaldi, where he has passages where he composes in his own way, in his Argentinian way, and then juxtaposes that with Vivaldi. Let's listen. Here, the first movement of Piazzolla's Las Cuatro Estaciones with Cremerata Baltica and Gidon Kremer himself on the violin. Thank you. Let's listen to the next excerpt. Again, Piazzolla, Four Seasons. This is the first movement, Summer. And he actually uses little snippets from Vivaldi's Summer, specifically in the solo violin, the scales rushing down. Here, the end of the first movement, Summer, by Piazzolla, that Vivaldi used in the last movement of his Summer. Isn't that creative? I really, really love that work. Our third piece of the program is by the living Argentinian composer Osvaldo Golijov. Osvaldo Golijov came to international recognition in the year 2000 with his now famous La Pasión Según San Marcos, His Passion, where he combined native South American musicians with Western-trained musicians of a symphony orchestra. Last Round, which is subtitled Deaths of the Angel, was a commission by the Birmingham Contemporary Music Group and premiered in the fall of 1996 for string orchestra. Now I want to read you a quote by Osvaldo Golijov talking about Last Round. He's saying, "I composed Last Round," the title is borrowed from a short story on boxing by Julio Cortázar, "as an imaginary chance for Piazzolla's spirit to fight one more time." That's all Golijov writing. "The piece is conceived as an idealized bandoneon. There are two movements. The first represents the act of a violent compression of the instrument, and the second, a final, seemingly endless opening sigh. It is actually a fantasy over the refrain of the song My Beloved Buenos Aires, composed by the legendary Carlos Gardel in the 1930s. But Last Round is also a sublimated tango dance. Two quartets confront each other, separated by the focal bass, with violins and violas standing up as in the traditional tango orchestras. The bows fly in the air as inverted legs in crisscross choreography, always attracting and repelling each other, always in danger of clashing, always avoiding it with immutability that can only be acquired by transforming hot passion into pure pattern." So far, Golijov's quote. Now, his string writing captures the quintessential sound of Piazzolla and tango, the moaning wheeze of the bandoneon, at once seductive and sarcastic. I would like to play you an excerpt here, the second movement of Last Round, performed by the Atlanta Symphony under the direction of Robert Spano. Wasn't this beautiful? And did you hear how Golijov tried to create the sounds of the accordion and put them right into the strings? Those lush, like, held notes. The last piece on the program is by Erich Wolfgang Korngold, who lived from 1897 to 1957. Now, Erich Wolfgang Korngold is for me the godfather, what I would call the Hollywood sound. Well, from a different perspective, the sound we originally considered Hollywood is actually Viennese. Well, that's quite a statement, right? And Korngold is the one who made it happen. His score to Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing is quite a fantastical journey. And the music, well, it reminds me of Richard Strauss, a little bit Johann Strauss, and with some of the lushest melodies ever written. And if you listen closely, you might hear a hint of the silver screen. Erich Wolfgang Korngold was considered a real child prodigy. And people like Mendelssohn or Mozart come to mind that were born into a musical family and were highly talented as very young children. In 1906, Korngold's father convinced Gustav Mahler to assess the little 9-year-old boy. And after having heard him play his cantata Gold at the piano, Mahler declared him to be an absolute genius and recommended that he be put under the compositional care of Alexander von Zemlinsky. And then, when he was 13 years old, Korngold's ballet The Snowman, Der Schneemann, was produced under astonishing acclaim at the Vienna Court Opera. Erich Korngold was invited by the Vienna Book Theater in 1918 to write the incidental music to Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing, and you all know what 1918 meant worldwide. It was the end of the First World War. That meant for the young composer that he had to compose for reduced forces. Much Ado About Nothing is scored for only one flute, one oboe, one clarinet, one bassoon, one horn, one trumpet, one trombone, one timpani. I guess you get the gist. It's also for harp, piano, and harmonium. That's actually different. It gives a little bit more a theater feel. Here's an excerpt of the first movement, right from the beginning, actually, performed by the Westfalen Symphony. And for me, it gives a real idea of this swirling, beautiful, fun, inspired music that characterized a little bit the 20s in Berlin, where everything seemed possible. Here, beginning of the first movement, Much Ado About Nothing. After that first introduction with the first theme, so extremely fiery, firework-like, and swirling, I would like to play you the second idea, the second theme, which is lush. And you kind of have a hint again of the silver screen that is later to come. Here again, Korngold, first movement from the suite Much Ado About Nothing. There's one more little excerpt. Now, that first movement is actually set up as a sonata form, meaning with an exposition, then a development section, and then again the recapitulation, which goes back to the beginning, the idea of the beginning. The development section sounds, well, maybe I'll just let it play and you get to judge for yourself. For me, there is a hint of Walt Disney. You can almost see Mickey Mouse running around at that time, or Donald Duck, or the Roadrunner. Extreme energy and ideas and harmonies that then really were flowing into Hollywood. What do you think? Mickey Mouse? And a little bit of Till Eulenspiegel by Richard Strauss, right? The bum 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 ba, that little horn solo. Well, that was it. Here you have it, my friends. This was my first podcast in my life, and it was a lot of fun. And just looking at my screen, it was actually a podcast with 13 tracks. All the music, all the different kind of little sections, and the interview. So, well, I think we did it. Thank you for listening. I hope you see me at the concert. Auf Wiedersehen.